Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Hey everybody, welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. My name is Dustin Nickerson.
It is.
I am the host of the aforementioned podcast.
You are.
A stand-up comedian, and across this table from me is Stephen English, a comedian and the co-host and the producer of this podcast. We appreciate you guys tuning in to this week's episode. If you are listening to this message right now, I am dead. I have died. I am no longer with us.
Yeah, I finally did
this
it.
This is the one we're doing right now, is the pre-recorded message for my kids. Is that the one we decided we were doing?
Right, because we plan on doing this podcast for
all
40
years.
All
of it years. Goes to the baby. I'm sorry, kids. You knew all along she was my favorite. And now you guys get to split up our two bad vehicles. All right, you guys get to fight over.
Well, I heard one of the cars is over Kelly Blue Book Valley right now.
Yes.
So.
Hey, yeah,
that's pretty good.
Sold
got equity
to me by your grandpa for over cost.
Yeah, there's equity in that.
No, if you, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, I have not died, but you guys have had a baby.
We've gained a backseater.
Yeah, and we gained. Yeah, get that kid a phone and some downloads, 5-star review.
Yeah.
We need that right away.
Yeah.
So congratulations
Thank
on that
you.
Baby, man.
Thank you. In the
you guys,
future. Thank you,
you
in the future.
You did such a good job. And
knocked it out.
You really did a great job.
Knocked it out of the park.
You both believed in your dreams.
Yeah.
And you set your a common goal, which was to give labor to that child. And Dorothy owes a lot to you.
It was a team effort.
It
I mean,
really
I would
was.
Definitely say she quarterbacked for sure.
Yeah.
She quarterbacked. She was the running back. She was the she was the lineman.
You're the water boy.
She was both linemen. I was more of the guy in the booth who just was like challenge, and I would like watch the video
you
and be
would
like
challenge.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
threw a red flag.
Yeah,
at
and
one
I was
point.
Like, yes, that's a baby.
Uh-huh.
That was like pretty much they asked me like, hey, is this a baby? And I would look. I looked at the video and I said, that's a baby.
That's a baby.
But if until I called it, they were kind of like, oh,
that
I don't
is
know,
a baby.
Yeah.
It looks to be my baby.
Yeah.
everything checks out here.
Yeah. Eyes, squinty eyes, so you know that's in English.
What?
Very squinty eyes. That's
why would the eyes be squinty?
Because I have very squinty eyes.
Is that true?
Yeah. Have you ever noticed when every time I smile or laugh?
I assume you're always on drugs. I constantly, and we got a little Dorothy drive.
It don't hurt.
Dorothy's holding that new baby because this is being recorded after the baby was born.
Right.
Congratulations on that
so
new
much.
Baby. This we're doing a pre-recorded one because
I'm not gonna have time.
He's gonna be busy,
yeah.
And you guys have seen the quality of some of these episodes when Stephen is not busy. You've seen, you've seen at least three of our guest names spelled wrong in the title.
And you know, has been Aaron
as
twice.
As recently is that one's an issue with you. Aaron is a real.
It was either Tuning or Aaron two A's. I don't know how I didn't do
you've
that.
You've misspelled Aaron Tuning's name both times he's been on the podcast.
Yeah, it might have been the first. It might have been the other Aaron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you would put two B's in Weber.
Yeah.
Like the grill.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So we thought what would be fun is because Stephen is just too lazy to work right now.
Right.
Too busy, lazy, same thing.
Right.
We were going to re-release our first episode, our very first episode that we did almost a year ago with this one Vicky Barbalack.
Oh, we recorded more than a year. We recorded this in February.
Yeah, but, this
we didn't
one.
Release
oh,
it
yeah,
until,
yeah,
we didn't
yeah,
release
yeah.
it until August, but we recorded it in
February.
Yeah,
that's right.
Like
this
over
is,
a
this
year
is a long
ago.
Time ago. This has been like two Valentine's days ago.
Yeah.
And Vicky Barbalack, a stand-up comedian from America's Got Talent. We recorded this at the old Madhouse Comedy Club before they moved in downtown San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And we just talk a lot of comedy. We talk a lot of family stuff. This is before AGT, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she didn't, you know, she was a road dog. She's a road dog now still, but she, you know, for those of you that know her now, you know, this episode, or you would know, you know, as someone who sells out and this, has a lot of fans. Yeah. It was very, very funny. And she was none of those things except very, very funny.
Yeah.
You know, she worked really hard. And she's a crusher, and she has some great old comedy stores. She was passed by Mincy Shore at the Comedy Store in Hollywood, and it's a really fun episode talking about, her and I share a lot in common as far as just kind of balancing being the quote-unquote working parent as you're trying to pursue this, and she's just as funny and interesting and unique as it gets, so...
Yeah.
We hope you guys enjoy this re-release of this old episode with Vicky Barbalak. There's a couple episodes that I think early on are like criminally under-downloaded.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They just were like in the very early, yeah,
because
before.
Because I just wasn't very popular then.
Yeah.
And neither were we. That reflects on both of us.
Yeah.
So, and we're not even going to get real tricky on the Munchie Mug ad right now. We're not going to do it. We're just going to tell you about Munchie Mug. And you're going to do it because you didn't do anything else for this week's episode.
Okay, you're
so
right.
Do the ad.
All right. Let me stretch, make sure I got
Munchie Mug.
Munchie Mug. Hey, you guys, Munchie Mug is the best spill-proof snack cup on the market. Nobody can beat it. Not one person in the history of the world has ever been able to beat it and never will be able to beat it. It's got two pieces.
In a fight.
Yeah. In a fist fight.
Yeah.
It's got two pieces of overlapping fabric instead of that hard plastic that a lot of them have. And a lot of them also have like gaps that little crumbs and stuff can spill out.
It's soft fabric, but it's not soft.
It's not soft.
It'll whoop you.
Yeah, it'll whoop you
in front
right
of your
in
family.
In the butt.
It'll beat you up like that kid beat me up in front of my dad when I was six. It just
And the kid was four, too.
Yeah, and his
That's
name,
the sad part.
Munchie. That's All not right. true. It was Jacoby.
Right. Kobe. Kobe does sound like a kind
yeah,
of
a
jerk kid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's two pieces of overlapping fabric. It's truly no spill. It's everything is 100% manufactured in the United States.
Probably painful to wash though.
It's
probably
not
really annoying.
Top
to wash.
Rack of that dishwasher.
Oh man,
oh,
you got a
boy,
dishwasher.
Oh boy, oh
boy. Tell me about munchiemug.com.
Yeah, if you go to munchiemug.com, it's munchiemug.com. You can get 25% off your entire order. And as always,
as long as you type in promo code don't make me,
free shipping as well.
Do it.
Don't make
All right, everybody, enjoy this episode with the great Vicky Barbalak, and you know, congratulations on that kid that you guys are about to have or will have had. And that this is tricky. This is like time travel. This is like an alternate reality.
Right.
This is like when Loki.
What if this is Marvel? What if?
Yeah, this is Marvel. What if? Oh, did you learn about that at Comic-Con? Oh, that would have been so great to go to Comic-Con. Or somebody wouldn't have promised me tickets.
Let me show. I forgot to show you all the stuff I got.
Enjoy this episode.
For me, when I first started, it was a comedy store in La Jolla, which I never could get on because I was so bad. And my daughter would call in every Sunday to see if I had a set. She'd go, "Hi, my name is Vicky."
She would call in on your behalf.
Am I on the set list? No. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, Mom.
Yeah.
No. Why do you make me do this, Mom? Because I can't do it.
Yeah. Like, you're just too nervous?
I can't handle the rejection. You take it.
Oh, man.
It's not as personal to you.
This
it's not
is
happening
right when
to
you. Started?
To that 12-year-old daughter that I did that
oh,
to.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And she did it.
Every week. She's a trooper.
Are the kids always...
She's learned to love rejection. She's good at it.
Well, I was going to say, comics, that's the whole business.
Yeah.
Is rejection.
I know. And I don't know why the only thing that bothered me was hearing that no every Sunday. But
Does so it still? Is it still there? Like the no's
when I'm rejected?
That we're not booking you? Or...
No, I remember when I tried out for Boston Comedy Festival, and I go there, and I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to go to Boston, but I'll go. And I didn't get it. They didn't even really notice. I mean, I didn't have a good audition, too. There was no excuse, but I had a terrible audition. And I still thought, well, anyway, they'll still take me because I'm so funny. And I'm like, and it was hilarious because I'm telling you, I didn't care at all.
Right.
I didn't feel rejected. I was just surprised that, shocked. How could Boston Comedy Festival not want Vicky Barbalak? This is silly. So dumb.
How dare they?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Phyllis Diller is mentioned in your bio. I read that.
Yeah.
Okay, you had a question.
So I was going to ask you, since you had such a palatial club to work at, professional, fabulous club, and they loved you from the beginning.
That's not true. But
I think it is. Pretty right away, and as they should. But now, did that mean you still had to go grubbing at all the horrible bars around town? Did you do that?
Yeah, I did a lot of bad shows.
You did a lot
of bars. Even when
you
I first...
To.
You do, absolutely. And... I was talking to somebody about this. I did a show on Monday. It was at a restaurant, and it was okay. You know, one of those shows where everybody has fun except the comics?
Yeah.
You
know? No, that's like good.
But what you realized is you learn to appreciate comedy clubs and good rooms if for no other reason that the crowd chose to be at a comedy show.
Yeah.
And that's why bars are so hard. Bar hijacks where...
Yes, exactly.
They don't want this.
Why are you here? I remember we used to go in with just a microphone and a box.
Yeah.
They didn't even know. The bar did not know we were coming. I'm not kidding you.
That's a true bar hijack. They didn't book the show?
No.
Yeah.
No, we'd walk in with a box and a mic and could we do a show?
And they said
yes?
We did
it a lot, like on Garnett. Yeah. Oh. They usually said yes. And they never said yes a second time, so you'd have to go to different bars all the time. It's like two or three of us.
That's
horrible.
Kind of your teeth in a different kind of way. Yeah, I remember one of the worst, it was my very first paid show. It was somebody messaged me and said, we'll pay you in $20 and a beer. And I was like, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do comedy.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. And it was at a brewery in Santee, and business was good. And I remember thinking, the reason that bars and restaurants do shows is to get customers. It's full. You don't need a comedy show. You have enough business here. And it was the middle of March Madness, and
they
turned the TVs off.
No. They stopped the game for the show?
They turned the TVs off.
No.
I'm excited walking out. Like, this is my first book show. They turn the TVs off. The host goes up, does five, very this introduction, brings me up. I'm supposed to be doing 20. Halfway into my set, they turn the TVs back on, and everybody claps.
That's hilarious.
But there were like five or six people that I just talked to at that point.
The first time I got paid to do 20, it was in Hawaii.
Really?
And yeah, my cousin lives over there and got me this job as a middle. I had maybe 5 minutes tops.
There was
tops.
A club out there?
Yeah, at the time, they did one night a week comedy, and they brought real comics, a headliner, and then a middler, usually from the islands. But the headliner came from, you know, was a headliner. And so she got me booked as a middler because I told her, I could do that. I maybe had 3 to 5 minutes tops.
No problem.
And so I go to Hawaii. I'm having a great week. I'm not even worried about it. I'm drinking. I'm partying. I'm snorkeling.
Yeah.
I never think about the set.
Where in Hawaii are you at?
In Maui.
There you go.
And I'm never even thinking that this Friday night is coming.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, well, it'll work out. I kept thinking I'd write a set. Come up with, no, I didn't do anything. Then Friday night happened. I get there, and lightning struck the generator in Maui, and the power went completely out. And the headliner's going around going, I can't work in the dark. They have to see my face. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't mind at all. I could just do it in the dark. I'd look thinner. And I was like acting real disappointed that there was going to be a snow show. But I got saved by the lightning.
By God. God
not
sent
for
you.
Real.
Yeah.
I believe all the time that happens.
He knew that you shouldn't go up
you
that night. He knew
go.
That you didn't, you
You're
didn't have 20. You
humiliated your cousin and all of her friends. It was sweet.
That's great. So it sounds like the cousins and then the daughter, in general, the family has always been pretty supportive of the comedy.
Yeah, I mean, when I started, I was like 38, and I just started, you know, at Sandy Shore's class, because that's where everyone should start with Sandy Shore's comedy class, otherwise you'll never be funny, because it's essential.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
858
I don't think they're running it anymore.
4429
Yeah.
Sandy, genius comic teacher. Anyway, I walked in there and there's some really good guys that are still my friends.
Right.
And I walked in there with three big books, like big giant books.
Yeah.
So that people would think I was smart. I was so like, that's who I was then. I was.
If I
just carry some large books.
They'll go, there's an intellectual.
Who does that?
Right there.
Who does that? I don't even know where I got the books.
What were the books?
They were just large books. I don't know. I could have like gotten them in a hotel lobby. I didn't read books like that.
I just need three books.
I just need three large books. Like people walk around, at any moment time.
Yeah.
That's who I was then. I had no idea of any.
So you're 37, you said?
38.
38. You have kids, married,
and I had
relationship?
Two
What's
kids
going
on? And I was married to a second husband.
Okay.
And
how old are the kids at this point?
Lily was six.
Okay.
And. No, five.
And what were
she
you
was
doing?
Five, and Emily was like 13.
Okay, were you working 12. At the time? Were you staying at home?
I worked for my parents' carpet store.
Okay.
Which was hilarious
yeah.
because My dad was a pro football player, and he had really bad brain injury, which we just thought he was an bad guy.
Right.
But he wasn't when I was little. But as he got older, he got crazier. Like, every morning he had a meeting his glass office, and he'd say, "A-holes, A-holes. That's all that ever works for me. I'm going to put an ad under the paper under A-holes." I mean, that's who he was, and then they had to build a
And you
wall.
Didn't know at the time.
I just thought he was
jerk. Yeah, we didn't know about football players so nice and concussions and all that kind of stuff.
Because he had a real sweet, wonderful side.
Right.
The wonderfulest guy in the world. And so finding that out was good. But and then they had to build a wall between my parents' desks because they threw stuff at each other all day long. So they built a 5-foot brick wall. Yeah. And there was a liquor store next to the carpet store, literally attached.
Okay.
So they'd always drink.
So that's good and convenient.
Yeah, very convenient. So they would drink at night after they finished work, and then they'd fall asleep on the carpet rolls, and then people would come in the morning.
At the shop. Yeah. They would fall asleep at
And then they'd say, "Are you open?" And then mom and dad would get up like nothing. And
open. Your house is near this?
No, our house is a few miles away, but the shop is next to the liquor store.
So you guys are at home by yourself?
Oh, no, at night, you know, because I was like 19 when we opened the shop. So I worked for them 20 years.
Yeah. And so they would sleep in the shop.
Yeah, pretty much a lot of the time.
Work, drink, sleep on the carpet rolls.
And then
get up whenever you get up the next
week. Exactly.
Was it a good business? Did they do well?
Yeah, they did well because back then, idiots could make money. Yeah. In retail. But like it was before Yelp. I mean, if there was Yelp on the Barbalax. No.
Nobody knew it was bad.
No.
Nobody knew.
No, because we'd cuss at customers. Get out.
It was like you're doing the bar show. They would buy one carpet.
Right.
They would
never come. But it was like. We had two customer types, really, really rich people. We only sold seconds and irregulars, so the carpets were all, you know, ruined before you bought them.
Right.
And so we had really, really rich people who liked to save money or just poor people who could go nowhere else.
Okay.
They had no alternative.
Right. Now, did your dad have, like, a name? Was it, like, when you see an ex-athlete open up an auto shop or anything?
No, it was, like, Pete Barbalak, but it was in the 50s playing in the Steelers, so nobody remembered him. Just weirdos.
Where is this? Is this in Pittsburgh, or where are you guys at this point?
So we're in Oceanside.
Oh, you're in Oceanside. Okay. So you're born and raised out here?
Pretty much.
Okay. So you work for them, go to work for them. Was that like straight out of high school then?
Right, yeah. Like 30 years in junior colleges while I was with them. Yeah.
When do you have kids?
Then I had kids when I was about 20. My first husband. No, I didn't have any with him. So my second husband is their dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was like 23. I'm really bad with dates.
It's
23,
okay.
24, and then 8 years
young
later.
Young 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then 8 years later.
Yeah.
So you start comedy much later. So you worked for them for 20 years, and then at 37, you 38. Go... 38, sorry.
And then I didn't really... And then I just did stand-up for fun for a few years, and then Mitzi saw me once at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, and then she goes, "Bring her on stage."
Yeah.
Which, you know, I never hardly got to be on that stage, but I'd been working really hard.
Right.
And Fred, the great manager who I love more than anything in the world... He was like my number one mentor, but he didn't know it. Anyway.
What do you mean? He would just give you notes here and there?
No, he would never give me notes.
Right.
He would speak to me.
Right.
But I worshipped him. And then eventually he did become my friend, and he did become like a champion, which was the huge thing for me. But,
yeah.
But he would never put me up. And so Mitzi saw me, and she goes, "Put her up." And then I went up, and she loved me and put me in Hollywood after that. So.
Yeah, it's exactly where I'm at right now. We have three kids. They're in good schools. We seem happy, and I drive up to LA once or twice a week.
Yeah, and that's what you're going to do. And then if you needed to, though, you could keep the fort down because you have a wife who could watch the kids if you had to be there 5 days a week. I didn't even have that.
Yeah. You know? A wife who's a big fan of yours, by the way.
Oh, she's such a doll.
Yeah, she'll be here tonight.
Oh, cool.
We're at Madhouse, like we said earlier, and we have a Valentine's Day show tonight, which I was excited to see you on the lineup.
I'm so excited. It's been such a weird day. Can I tell you this
Please
bizarre
do.
Thing? So I live in a trailer park, and it's a very
nice
Vista, trailer park.
Up in Vista, north of
gated,
San Diego.
Fully gated.
A gated
trailer park, only one gate worked, which was ridiculous. I mean, like, why would we just have one?
Right.
So dumb. You'd wait there like in Blazing Saddles, and you know you could just drive out the other way. But so this
trailer, this needs to be enclosed.
Yeah, so this trailer park is super nice. I've been there 5 years, and I got a new trailer, the trailer of my dreams, up on a hill. Mm-hmm. Yes, you still close escrow at the DMV, which is a drag, but the new trailer's up on a hill. It's like I've been watching this trailer 5 years.
Yeah.
Finally, I noticed the lady.
This is the one.
This could be
This
vacant.
Is the one you had your eye on.
So I got it. We got it. We did everything to get it. So my niece is down. She got a new job, and she's come down from Northern California. She drives down Sunday night. She parks at the new trailer up the hill from my house at 9 p.m. after driving up from Northern. She comes back to our trailer. We wake up in the next morning. She goes to get her car. Her first day of her new job in La Jolla, her car's gone.
What?
Someone stole her car.
In La Jolla?
In the trailer park.
In the trailer park.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Shocking. Shocking. She has this gorgeous clothes, Coach bags, and everything in their world is in this van. It's gone. We're heartbroken. Oh. So then this morning, Lou goes to change the laundry because we have a wash machine at the new trailer. He goes to change the laundry. The car is returned.
What?
The car is returned.
Someone brought the
car
back?
To the parking lot with everything in it.
What?
Like it was a time warp. Like on Valentine's Day in the morning, it got returned overnight to the same spot which it was taken.
What in the world?
Yes, so I had to call the police. The police came down. They're like, what? Like, what?
This has never happened.
Nothing's better than the Oceanside Police. You guys can solve anything.
At this point.
Of course they think I'm crazy. Yeah, I live in a trailer park. I'm wearing a leopard underwear and some matching slippers. More than they want to see in the morning. They're like, could you go put a robe on and come back with your ID? Yes.
No.
Yes. And so...
What happened?
No one knows.
It's like a Copperfield. Vanished and then brought it back.
Exactly. No one knows.
That's the strangest thing I've ever heard. I wonder if somebody just got a guilty conscience. Or maybe they got in and they saw how valuable it was in and then they got scared that somebody in the mob was going to kill them for stealing this car.
Lou said they had stealer's remorse.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't know.
So, okay. So I'm interested in a few things. I'm interested in the comedy start, but I'm also interested in the what family life looks like when you start. So the girls are – I love that she's calling in your avails.
Absolutely. And then Emily, the older one.
People don't realize that. Like, it's a comic when you first start. I mean, I was talking to a friend about this recently. You know, a comic deals with rejection more than anybody I've ever met. And it's not – they don't reject your ideas. They don't reject your work. They reject you.
Right.
No, we don't want to book you. And then we deal with it on stage. As they go, no, people would say no, they don't like that joke. But when you're on stage, they go, no, we don't like you. We don't like your vibe. We don't like your energy. We don't like the words, your thoughts, your opinions. It's very, very personal. And you realize pretty early on, like you see a lot of people do a few open mics. Couple maybe go a year or two and it's just rejection, and they go, why am I doing this? Why didn't I sign up for this?
I remember I loved bombing so much for the first few years. I mean, I loved it.
Yeah,
people were like, you can stop now. Like, I don't know, this is pretty fun.
That's a funny idea. She's not very good. No, I love bombing.
I love bombing.
I'm choosing to do that. I know a lot of comics who it seems like they love bombing.
Seriously. I remember this one comic, like I'm not going to say his name, but I worked with him forever, and then Fred Burns went to Los Angeles and he was working at the Ice House, and this comic came in, and Fred used to tape them and charge $20 at the corner room. So one day this guy said, Fred, your machine is broken. It's absolutely broken. Fred's like, what do you mean? The guy goes, I couldn't hear any laughter.
Whatever you're piping in, it's not coming through.
So like,
this isn't working.
So yeah, this guy must have heard imaginary laughter in his head. But the beginning times are they are just bizarre.
I dreaded that call so much. I dreaded the call to put my name on the open mic. I dreaded the call to see if I got on. Anymore, it's easy. Like a couple years ago, they switched. Like it's all online. It's all Facebook. You know whether you're not. So it doesn't. It's distant. But on the phone, I would call Polo, who worked here. I'd go Polo, and hey, we didn't put you up, Dustin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We didn't get. Nope. Nope.
So, what now, about how old not on the kids, weekend? You couldn't. Yeah. You couldn't teach them to talk real deep like that.
No. They're learning all the words at that point. Well,
don't change your diaper and you call the store.
And you go and you're so desperate at that point that you're like, I just need some stage time. I need to do anything. You know.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of that rejection early on. But I have kids when I start too. And you don't talk to a lot of people that have a kind of an established family. Family, when they start, you're 37, or I keep getting your age.
Yeah, 30,
late 30, and I was 27 when I started.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
my
it's
comedy
old term, for a comic.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's 130. Yeah, in regular people like, years.
Who is this dad?
Yeah,
what is he up there talking about being a dad? Who has dad? No, like not dad, not dad jokes, dad material.
Right, you know? Exactly. The people love that. I think that I built all my early comedy on all. You know, you build your comedy on what you do. And I remember I had a live-in. From Oaxaca for a few years when I was working at my parents' shop, and so she was when I first started stand up. I was still working at my parents' shop for the first 5 years.
Yeah,
and so I had a live in, and so a lot of my comedy was about the live in and the live in raising
my
kids. And you just go from that.
Yep.
And Lily, my oldest one, Emily, she's very funny.
Yeah,
and she was very like she would sit on the couch and I'd make her listen to my set and she'd go hack. 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 Hack.
This is the girl that was calling hack. You in calling in your avail. Yeah. She's just hack.
She's like, hack. Everything. If I ever got a laugh out of her.
Heard it. Heard hack. It.
Yeah.
No. No.
Seriously. So it was really
that's
great.
That's Phyllis's dill no. joke. Yeah.
Want another airplane joke, Mom? No.
Yeah.
Hack.
So they're not only supportive, they're involved.
Oh, yeah.
And right away.
So much. And I took them whenever I was, whenever they're off school, and that's when we could travel, and I took them on the road with me a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And
I'll say when I first started, I was almost like a little embarrassed, mm-hmm. you know, like, you're 27, you're a dad, you have a job. Like, this is kind of weird. Why are you...
Yeah.
Why are you sludging around open mics, yeah. you know?
I don't
with
have
all
a
these...
right to do this, what, yeah. I, what I'd like to do.
And everyone is such degenerates, you know? Yeah, like sure. We all are. And I am just in a different way. Like, on the outside, everything's pretty put together. So it felt like, man, I don't relate to a lot of these people in general. I'm
yeah.
in different life stages.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, we yeah. do different things.
There's and no needles in your pocket.
Yeah.
yeah.
But there was, like, in, for lack of a better thing, there was just kind of an itch that needed to be scratched. There was, like, I want to do this. I want to try this. And
yep.
I did it, and, you know, you catch the bug or blah, 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 blah. But even still, it is, you know, there's just challenges. You're missing dinners because you're going out early. You know, you watch your kids do something and you don't just enjoy it. You go, can I put that on stage?
Yeah. I remember I used to go to the one kid played like competitive volleyball. And I put, you know, that was like her whole world. And it was a lot of time.
Right, right.
And she ended up getting college scholarship. But I remember showing up in Anaheim at the sports center in my outfit before I'd go to Hollywood.
Yes.
And the other parents would talk about me, and then I'd hear stories later as they got to know me. Oh, but then they really appreciated that. I mean, there was times I would drive from Reno all night long
yes.
to see a morning game, and
yeah.
I'd show up, you know, and that's what you do.
Yeah.
And it's just what you do.
This last Sunday, I'm coming back. I had a gig in Gray, Georgia. 2,000 people. The billboards say Gray, Georgia. Keep Gray rural.
Like there's a possibility they're going to be turned into New York City tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
real metropolitan.
Hold the subway.
I go into the McDonald's and I go and order an oatmeal and a coffee. And they kind of looked at me like, oatmeal? I was like, it's on your menu. Almost like they like, it
never
was just
bought,
a, it was
nobody
a box
ever bought it before.
That corporate had sent them. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
I sit on that on my break. I don't know. Oh, that. And I order a coffee. And I go, this is my first time here. I've never been to... And in unison, these two girls go, we know. Like they knew,
they knew you.
Right away.
And 2,000 people came to the show? That
no,
means
no,
the
no,
entire
no.
town?
There's 2,000 people
in
this. No,
in the town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was...
I was going to say.
No.
Where?
It was 200 people.
Well,
it was
that's 10% yeah. of the town came.
Yeah,
that's pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it was good. And but
in San Diego, that would be 200,000 people.
I know. We need to start getting that percentage. Whatever they're doing in Gray is working marketing wise. But so the next day, I'm taking an early flight because my daughter has a dance recital, and I missed the first one. She has two dance recitals, one at the school and then one at the little theater. And it's like, okay, I can't miss both of these. And Sundays, usually I'm in town on Sundays, and. It's like, I gotta get home, just praying against, you know, delays. You've been there. It's
was there
terrifying.
A direct flight? Or?
Yeah, it was a direct flight okay. from Hartsfield, you know, in Atlanta, which
yeah.
is a busy airport,
yeah.
to San Diego. I should be getting home in no time. The issue becomes the flight is oversold, and now they're offering vouchers.
Oh, no, that's a moral dilemma.
And it's way oversold. They go, we have 11... We need 11 volunteers. That's a lot of volunteers.
How much did they get up to?
They got up to $700.
Oh my God.
And not just vouchers, in Visa gift cards
no.
and Best Buy gift
no.
cards. And I'm thinking, surely we can record this. Surely we can record this. And I can watch this on our new flat screen that
yes,
we bought from Best
which
Buy.
Your daughter would so enjoy.
I know.
Did you not take the
no,
money?
Of course. No,
you
of course. I got on the plane.
Oh, you're
good. And I came
good.
Home. And I saw the joy in my daughter's eyes, and I was like, okay, I made the right decision. But even part of you is like, $700.
Oh, no, there's no way.
But it's...
I would have been lying my teeth out. The plane, unfortunately, there was a mechanical problem.
There's nothing I could do. And, well, I mean, because you're really setting yourself up for a cats in the cradle situation.
Yeah, you're right. You know, you did the right thing.
Well,
oh, the torture.
Oh, yeah. Honey, no, you can have some of the gift card. I'm sorry, I missed your
of
recital.
Of course, that's what I would have been dealing.
Yeah.
You have a Toys R Us in that bag, ma'am?
Do you have Toys R Us? That's exactly right. So you deal with that. But you get home, you do the, I've done that too, the late night drives, so you're around, you're groggy, you're falling asleep at the volleyball game, you're doing it all.
Yeah, that's it.
But
it,
you have a relationship with him now.
That's great.
How old are the daughters?
I mean, I wouldn't have traded like any success financially or, you know, star away that I would have had if I'd have, for the life that we have. It's right. So much fun.
Yeah.
It's just been, it's, we have a great life.
Right. And how old are the daughters now? They're adults.
Not good with numbers. It's all right. But one of them is 26.
One
of them
is 37, about to start
26
coming.
And 33.
26 and 33.
Or 32. Something like that.
So this is, you know, my dad lives with me. So I have an idea of what, you know, I'm an adult. He's the dad, the adult child relationship. But to think about it now, my kids are 10, 8, and 3. She'll be 4 next week. And to think about them being adults and dealing with adult things.
It's
and
so much fun.
Is it?
It's so much fun. At one point, you just make this decision that you don't have to help them anymore. And then you can borrow money from them. I recently borrowed $30,000 from the old one to one buy the new trailer because my other trailer sold. I'm like, this pays me. You know, I have to pay her back.
But yeah.
This felt good.
Yeah.
This is everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, all that.
And she was happy to do it, or was it arm twisting?
Well, I'm going to have to get her husband a new bedliner for his truck. But that was all I had to do for it.
That's not bad.
Nothing.
To get the trailer
of
your dreams.
To get a $30,000 loan with no interest?
Yeah.
No, it's
on
sweet.
Top of the trailer on top of the hill.
Yeah. So it's, there's a point where you just go, you stop giving them that advice that you used to give them because you don't need to do that anymore. And they just become your friends.
Yeah.
You're on peer level.
Yeah.
And once that happens.
Because you have the same issues.
Yeah. And it frees you up when you think of them as. They're done. You finished.
Right.
Now you just enjoy them.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, because now it's constant coaching and effort and, you know.
You're responsible for their life.
Yeah, yeah. They did this today. I mean, our son's 10 and, you know, he's on the doorstep of puberty. He's just right there.
Yeah.
Where he's on the eve of it. And constant, you know, I told Melissa, my wife, like, this kid has to make 10,000 choices a day. And his brain is vibrating. It's crazy. He's literally transforming. He's about to start adolescence, which is the transformation from a child to an adult.
Right.
And so everything about him is changing. And he's testing. And he's mean to a friend. And he's nice to this kid. And he's trying to be cool. But he's also still kind of a kid. And he'll you know, it's cool to like this. But he'll still kind of enjoy watching his little sister's shows. But he has to be cool about it, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's true. And the little chemicals in the little boys are just huge.
I get it. Yeah. So it's an interesting, you know, thought to go, oh, they're not going to be your kids anymore. I mean, they'll be your kids. They're not going to be your children anymore.
You know, but what I used to do is, like, be really sad at the beginning of any phase change, you know, baby change, toddler change. Although babies I didn't really enjoy. But toddler change, you know, kindergarten change, first grade. Then I realized, why am I sad? Everything I like better.
Yeah.
And when they get to be adults, honestly, I like it better than any other part.
Really? Really? See, I like them when they're, I have a 10 and 8-year-old. I liked them when they were younger. I do.
Isn't that funny? I really love the adolescent years and I love the teenager years.
I should say I like them. I just love their little years.
Yes.
I love the cuteness.
It is adorable.
Of it. That's what it is. Yeah. I'm a sucker for cute, especially with my girls.
But I think you are dad. I, as a mom, it's all on you. Their protection, I think. And for me, keeping another person alive, remembering that you brought a kid with you, that's too much.
Yeah.
Once they can speak up, mom.
Yeah.
Remember, I'm with you.
Yeah.
That's what I need. The child, the little kids. I'm so terrified. I would.
Yeah.
It was all on you. After 5, they have to take some responsibility.
Yep, absolutely. No, that makes sense because when I talk to Melissa about it, it is, well, sometimes we'll see a little one or we'll look at Claire who's turning 4 and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss this. And she's like, no, I'm good. I know what it takes to birth one of these.
Yeah.
I don't need to go through that process again.
No.
And, you know, it's all on you. You know, your body goes through the changes. You go through
and
the
struggles. And you guys leave and do the, and we're, you know, I mean, you're a couple, but I mean, whether
I'm gone,
single,
depending on the week, I'm gone 3-4 nights.
That's right.
You know?
And the new life you have is way different even now as a comic compared to just 9-to-5 guy.
Absolutely.
It's all on her. So, yeah, for her as well, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, although
it's easy to say, don't you want another one? And then leave for the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, sure do.
Here's 4
like
of these.
A couple more.
And my dad's like a fourth child, honestly.
Yeah, right. For sure.
He's so fun. My dad, I was raised by a single dad, and he did great. My mom kind of went away, and then she reemerged, and we love her, and things are good now. There's, you know, but there's just gaps.
Yeah.
You know, we're making the best of what we have now.
Yeah.
So, but it's fun to have my dad in the house because he's filling in memories of what things were like, but it's having your parent live with you, because he's down here because it's warm, and he likes being around the grandkids. And every once in a while, he'll chip in different ways. But he's a bit of a hypochondriac. He's a bit of, like, just the worries and this and this. And something's kind of always wrong. He said today he came out. He'd slept for, like, 10, 11 hours. And he comes out and he's like, oh, man, I'm starting to worry that I'm getting too much sleep. And we're like, how dare you? How dare you?
You guys are painting your eyes open. I think I'm getting too much rest. Is there anything maybe I could do to help around the house now and then?
There was an old Dana Carvey bit. Dana Carvey was my favorite comic growing up, where he talked about non-parents that would go up to kids and they go, you know, she comes up and your friend goes, I slept till noon and I'm still tired, you know, and you're like, this is happening in my real life, but it's my dad who's living with us. Overall, positive to have him in the house. But when he comes out, he just goes, oh, and then he kills the coffee. You know, like, all right, go back to your cave and sleep some more.
How fun. Yeah, really. He can't even make another pot, Dad.
So, yeah, exactly. So the thought of them, you know, to be adults and having peer-like conversations, and at a certain, like you said, when they're adults, you have the same struggles. You have bills to pay. You have careers to figure out, especially if your kid's young. Like, yeah. We had our kids young.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, when my kid graduates from high school, I'm going to be 40.
Yeah.
41.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so it's not like I'm going to have my life figured out.
Maybe, though. I mean, and then you got college, and you got a spread. I mean, it's, and then let's face it, it never ends, because, like, they still call me, like, you know, can you? And I always say, whenever possible, yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
I always can.
Are they coming? So they're related. Are there still those moments where you're clearly mom coming to you for advice or solace or comfort?
Yeah, the same bad advice I've always given them. They don't listen to it, but they always
I can be here for you no matter what. I can always be here to give you bad advice.
It always comes down to mom lives in a trailer. We'll ask her anyway.
Yeah. That sounds like a merch shirt you would sell after shows.
You know, I was listening to Lacey Vaughn, that skier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like before you do a really big show, that's a really big show, important show, like a showcase or a television show, how terrifying it can be.
Absolutely.
And I heard her say the other day, she goes, before I race, she used to always think about, you know, these amazing injuries she's always got. Like, Billy, if you listen to her, like, she's femur broken. She's broken every bone in her body.
Yeah.
And she goes, when she tricked herself a few years ago, she goes, so I could keep doing this, what I love to do, I just say, instead of that moment of fear that I always had at the gate, which I heard this other guy skier goes, the only reason I go is because there's six other guys next to me. If they weren't there, he goes, I'd probably choose not to.
I would never do this by myself.
Right, so she's up there at the gate. So she just said, I trick myself to say, I'm grateful for this opportunity. I'm enjoying this opportunity right now that I have. So I'm like, she is risking her life. I live in a trailer. I'm doing stand-up. If I fail, well, how far could I fall?
I'm at the bottom.
Yeah. I have nothing to lose by any performance ever again. So I took her picture and I cut it out. I'm like, I'm carrying it.
Yeah, you're my inspiration.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that it comes in later, but man, every performance still, you always want to do well. It's not like you know, like it can feel like, oh, it's a low stakes show, but man, when you're up there, it hurts. Every bomb hurts, you know. But I've never seen you struggle, so I'm sure you have. I still do, and I'll say purposely.
But there are times when I'm like, going, I shouldn't do this right now. Let's do it, you know. And I used to love to watch really master comics, and they'd be so sick of doing well, they'd dig a hole, dig out, just because they did it. Now, I don't intentionally do that necessarily, but I just misbehave sometimes.
Yeah.
And then I go, I shouldn't, and then it's just now and then.
But it's authentic and it's fun at that point. And you're having a good time.
You got it. Just for you.
Have I told you the story of the very first time I saw you do comedy?
No.
So the idea of you being at La Jolla trying to get in is, I don't know that world, because when I started, there was the La Jolla comics, and then there were, like, kind of the have been around La Jolla legends. you know, who had just kind of been around and, you know, like some guys that you know, some guys that you don't, and you were kind of on the list. Ray Anderson, you know, like just guys kind of like some old school guys that you didn't necessarily see a lot, but you would know. And I was like, oh, this guy goes to, this guy performs in Los Angeles. You know, I didn't know.
Right.
So the first time I'm hanging out at the store, because I started here, but I do the store a lot now. The first time that I go up there, Bobby Lee's hanging out.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's great. That's Bobby Lee. Yeah. You know, this guy was on Mad TV when I was a kid, you know. And I know that Bobby is the San Diego guy originally. Yeah. And he's in that ilk of...
Fred Burns.
Exactly. And he's outside, and I hear big laughs. And I walk in, and you're on stage. And I look at the list, and I go, it's Vicky. And you're on stage, and you couldn't be crushing harder. You know, there's that top echelon. You're just crushing so hard. And you're leaning forward, and one of your boobs pops out.
Oh, God! I remember that night. Hey, yes.
This is the first time that I see you.
Oh, my God,
perform.
I'm so sorry.
And you didn't realize it at first.
Yeah.
You didn't know.
Yeah.
The whole crowd gasped.
Yeah.
And we all and are laughing because they're with you.
Yeah.
And they like you, and you don't know what's happening.
Right. Yeah.
And we all have the fear of your fly being down. This is a totally different level of, oh my gosh, what happened? And you rolled with it. Mm. You remember this moment.
Yeah. Oh my God. I tried to suppress it till you brought it back. And now it's all rumbling back in a horrible fire. Yeah. Oh God. It's so horrible.
But you recovered. It wasn't even recovery. You didn't. When you were second talking about digging yourself in a hole, I was like, did she do it on purpose?
No.
Did you do
it? No.
Did you see could get out of the I accidentally exposed myself hole, that old trick?
There was another thing I used to do, which I should do again because it's really fun. I used to change clothes during my set.
Oh, really?
So I would pull one leopard dress off and pull one up.
Would you acknowledge it or were you just up there doing it?
I would just do it. I go, time for a costume change. But one time, I had a long dress and had a big slit in it.
Yeah.
As I recall. And somehow or another, with pulling the other dress, I can't remember now if the long one came off or the short one came off, but whichever, in the midst of it, the slit exposed and there was quite a show.
So you've been naked on stage before that.
It was the lower part.
You were Bobby's inspiration.
I was like Bobby. And Bobby loves to, you know, of course, take off his clothes. And I don't know if I ever want to see his tummy again. And I know nobody wanted to see what they saw that night. I'm not well taken care of. But anyway, there's a lot of men that are gay now. I'm sure. From that night.
You can imagine what it was like for me. And because everybody was laughing. I was like, is it just like this here? Is it like this every night? Because everyone was like, yeah, it's old Vicky. Like as it was like a shtick. Like, oh, yeah, she's doing that old thing again.
Exactly.
And then your daughter comes in, hack.
Hack with a tit. Hack. Really?
Oh, she's seen that old before.
God. Oh, those poor kids.
It was, so I have two vivid Vicky memories, and it's that, and then the other one of you, this is part of the reason that my wife adores you so much, is we are at Ryan and Josiah's pool party.
Right.
What was the day?
The housewarming party.
Housewarming party.
A warm day.
There are four people that are swimming.
Yeah.
Three of them are Nickerson children.
Yep, they're darling.
The fourth is Vicky.
I'm in my clothes. I didn't bother putting a suit on.
On the dolphin.
On the dolphin.
And wouldn't let my kids use the dolphin.
Yeah, they wanted to be on it. I'm like, no.
But you so politely, they were like, can we? And you're like, I'm using it right now, sweetheart. But you kept rolling off. You kept doing accidental barrel rolls.
There's a 200-pound woman on a dolphin. It's not meant to hold that much weight.
It was so funny. And they're just swimming around you, and it's just my three Nickerson kids swimming around.
We were playing basketball,
That's right. You were playing basketball.
I tried to divert him so
and
I could hold on to the...
You wouldn't let him win.
No.
You
wouldn't. No, I would never let a kid win. I was mad. You remember that? Oh.
Yeah, you were mad. Joel kept beating you.
I think it's... I'm pushing it.
This is Nickelodeon's funniest mom right here. This
the
is
worst mom.
Worst mom. Oh. Funniest, at least.
Oh, it's so funny when I think about these people that hire me for fundraisers and they think they're going to get Nickelodeon's funniest mom. And I try.
Yeah.
I do try.
How did you earn that title? What was that a competition? Was that a... I don't...
Yeah, it was a competition. And a couple years, I tried to get in it, but it was all Laugh Factory shut me out because I was a Comedy Store comic. Mm. They totally shut me out. And then the producers
that sounds like
ended
old
up,
school Hollywood.
Yeah, it was. And then they changed to the producers that did Pauly Shore's short-lived TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew me, and they brought me into audition.
Yeah.
And then it was at the Laugh Factory, and I never ran into Roseanne because she was hardly doing stand-up then.
Right.
But I always thought if she saw me.
Because she was hosting the show, right?
And I always was worried if she saw me, she'd think I was a hack of her.
Oh,
but I, you know, am similar. But we're very different. Our comedy's really different. But it's similar because I live in a trailer. She lived in a trailer. So anyway, I was always worried. And we have dark hair at the time. So I was worried, would Roseanne think I'm just, you know, whatever?
Right.
So I was never saw her before. So I go there. I find out she's going to be the host. I said, is she here tonight? Everyone said, no, she's not here. So I said, thank God. So I did my set. And it turns out I started hearing her laughing off to the side. I'm like, uh-oh.
Uh-huh. Well,
so
you know that laugh when you hear it, too.
And so then she loved me, though. She was wonderful, and she let me write for her. And, she's...
Did she get you on the show?
She's not let me write for a show now, though. And I wish
she was.
It's
a different kind of show.
Because I bet you I could make it funnier.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to be, but I know I could.
That's great. So, do you have grandkids? Or are they... No.
I do. And you know what? One thing happened a few years ago because, like, I think it was because I had grandkids and everything else. There was Tommy was running the Comedy Store in L.A. Mitzi was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy just never, he's like, he hated me. Mm. He hated anyone old, anyone black, anyone, most women. Mm. He was just a horrible guy. And he was willing to take care of Mitzi's 2 days a week because she needed overnight care. And so they let him work there. And Mitzi liked him enough, which was good. But he just hated me, and I was not willing to fight for my spot. So I just kind of took myself out of it. And then when I did that, taking myself out of the store, I sort of became like, I thought, okay, I don't know. This was like maybe 8 years ago, seven maybe. I don't know. I'm not good with numbers. But it made me get really kind of depressed and sad. And I thought, well...
Just not going up there anymore.
I thought, well, you know what? There was my comedy career. Mm. I got really good, and I need to stop now because I'm too old, and it's over. And I didn't tend my garden well enough, and I've lost it. It's over. Mm. And I didn't deserve it anyway, and I sure had a great time, and boy, is it done.
Mm.
And I pretty much backed off from most stand-up for like about a year. I hardly went up at all. And
right.
And I was really sad and kind of crazy in my head, like kind of really, really upset, but wouldn't acknowledge it.
Right.
And I was just kind of nutty for a couple years, like really like lost.
Mm.
And then I don't know what happened a few years ago. Something I said to myself, I went and started going up again with these Funniest Housewives of Orange County show.
Right, Cindy Burns.
And it kind of brought me back, and then a few fundraisers, and it just kind of brought me back to doing it and realizing all these years you learn how to lay a brick wall. You become a master bricklayer. Why would you quit?
Right.
Nobody told me I had to quit.
Right.
I told myself I had to quit.
Yeah.
I'm like, I took myself out of the game.
You just got in your head.
It got in my head, and I believed all those bad things that I used to think about myself. And so the cool thing is, I feel like a few years ago, when I first started stand-up, it's like somebody threw me a life preserver. The woman who walked with the three books into the class to look smart, that was just knew nothing about herself and knew nothing about joy other than being a mom. So then I got to have this great, joyous life, and then I decided I didn't get that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got it back in a different way, because when I got it back, it's been like... even more precious to me, and I kind of feel like I'm so old now that I'm over this weird hump. Like I'm so like almost a, it's just a different,
it's a variety.
Hey, she's an old woman comic. It's a different world, anyway. And the thing is, my audiences that I work in front of, they can be young, they can be old, they can be poor, they can be rich, they can be anything, because they're still, I still am the same person, even though I'm older, and the vulnerability might be stronger, and that might make it more interesting.
Yeah.
But I've been having more fun the last couple years than I've ever had, and I'm so just super grateful, you know?
That's lovely.
For that.
I love that. Yeah, it's interesting how we... every comic that I've met is internally a mess. And if they're not, they're usually not very good, you know?
It's funny. It's true to a great extent, right?
Yeah.
Everybody, if you're going to do this, you're going to have something going on.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's everybody, you want to go to Kmart and see those people have things going on?
Yeah.
Everybody has things going
on.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
So what I kind of think that in comedy, what I love is people go, oh, you don't like comics, do you? I'm like, huh, you ever want to work at a carpet store and hang out with carpet installers? Do you think they're fabulous people? I mean, I think we find it's more kindred spirits in the comedy
world. It's like
world.
Finding your tribe.
And you can, and not all of them, but I'm finding, you know what I mean? I feel like it's so lucky to be around other comics because there's going to be kindred. There's going to be so many wackos that are, you know, we don't, we're on the same wacko level, no.
Yeah, you just find a person, because to me it's more, the comic is just, it's like, you're just thinkers, right? It's on all the time. And so you find somebody, when you connect with another comic, you go, oh, you've thought about that too? And you've thought about everything all the time?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
You've thought about big things and small things constantly?
Yeah.
And yourself and everybody around you and literally everything you've ever seen, you've thought about it and have an opinion on it. And so when you start to meet people like that, you start to realize, no. Like you said, there's a kindred spirit here. There's a tribe here. I relate to these people. Finally.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think it's interesting what you're talking about, where you're like, well, I'm too old for this. I think that most of the comics that I've met have some insecurity in them that talks them out of why I can't be great or why I shouldn't do comedy. For me, it was, I'm 27. That's a late start. I'm a dad. You know,
I can't be irresponsible.
Yeah,
I have to get more money in my regular job.
Young people won't like me. Yep. They won't relate to me in any way. And we have that. And then I go, no, it's not about that. It's, you know, comedy, if I can be funny and I can be authentic, then I've got something going. But that's, we all have something. Well, I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm a woman.
There's a fear there. And there's a fear is with us.
Right.
And so that's the thing, like always managing fear, like Lindsay Vonn, like my whole world is about managing the fear.
Right.
The fear is with me, but it's not going to drive me.
Right.
It doesn't get to drive me.
Right.
It's
right
here. Hello, fear.
Yeah.
But it can't be, it has to be back there.
Yeah.
And so
Seinfeld talks about that, and that comics, they deal with quelling fear more than anybody. Because with each new act,
except for Lindsay Vonn,
that's true. And in that, sometimes, well, that's the thing though. If you Americans' number one fear is public speaking, that's what we're more scared of than anything else. It's not flying. It's not driving. It's not spiders. It's not snakes. It's not. It's not murder. It's not. It's not shoot. It's not guns. It's public speaking. That's what Americans say is their number one fear. And then that is heightened to its most crucial extent on a stage where not only are you public speaking, everyone goes, be funny. You have to be funny. You have to try. You have to put yourself. So crowds, even in comedy club, they go, is he going to be funny? I don't know. You know, like, he seems awkward, or I don't know if he's going to be funny. He doesn't look like a comedian. I started at the beginning of January. I was doing shows at Brad Garrett's club in Vegas. Super fun. And my first two nights, I really struggled. I wasn't bombing, but I wasn't doing well either.
Vegas are weird.
Well, it was interesting because I talked to the middle, really nice guy, Dave Burley, and he goes, you're too adversarial. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, you're obviously used to playing rooms where you feel like you have to prove that you're funny. These people spent $50 on a ticket. They think you're funny. They want you to be funny. And that's so opposite. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of comics are like, prove it. You got to prove to me that you're funny. They're like, we spent enough. They're at a Vegas show. They chose you over Cirque du Soleil. And they're just saying, no, we assume you're funny. You wouldn't be at this club if you're not funny.
That's so funny because you're used to pushing shows where the lineup is terrifying.
Right.
Mostly people aren't funny.
Right.
Yeah, you know, Steve Martin said the comedy is an agreement between you and the audience that you're funny.
Yes.
And like, that's for me, like, that's like a calming all the time.
But when you bring your boombox into a bar, nobody's agreed to anything.
Hey, and I think that was so much fun. Let me ruin your night. You wouldn't take me out, would you, weenie brain?
You don't even. And
so let me wreck your night.
And when they're not into it and they weren't for the show, I don't even feel bad.
No.
I'm just like, this is my fault.
This is important. To me.
We're going to do a show here in a couple minutes. We're at Matt Helson's show starts in, I think, Doors here in a couple minutes. Holiday shows are always interesting to me. Have you done Valentine's? I'm sure you've done Valentine's Day show before. Usually good crowds,
they're
right?
Always fun.
Yeah.
They're so fun. And Valentine's Day is fun.
Yeah.
Of course, tonight will be horrible because we said it was fun. Okay, I want to say that Valentine's is the worst night to perform.
It's going to be awful.
Oh, it's going to be horrible.
It's going to be so bad. They're
going to throw chocolates at us.
No, they're out on a show. Yeah. They probably spend a little more money on the ticket than normal. Yeah. The room won't be papered, all those kind of things. All good comedy indicators. They're on dates. There'll be no bachelorette parties.
Oh.
There'll be no, I think, probably not.
Well, there could be a posse of chicks.
Girls' night out, single night. We don't need a man. which is typically my least favorite crowd member. In general, my least favorite crowd member is a young, cute girl. Because they think that no rule applies to them in life. Right. You know, it's just like it's okay that I talk because I'm cute.
And
you
have exactly.
to, I'm like, I don't care that you're cute. I'm married and I don't like people. I don't.
That's really bad news for a girl like that. So
yeah.
Don't ever give her that bad news. She only has 10 more good years. Just let her be adorable. It doesn't last.
I had a friend text me recently. She's a young female comic. And she said to me, like, oh, man, being old as a comedian, being an old comedian sounds terrifying. You know, I'm so glad that's so far away. And I was like, no, you're 24. You're 4 years away from female old.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a different set of standards. Yeah.
But she'll be fine.
Yeah. She'll be phenomenal. So as far as holidays go, Valentine is a good one. I don't like New Year shows, though.
Christmas Day shows are the worst.
I don't think I've ever done a Christmas Day show.
I've done Christmas Day La Jolla for like 3 years in
a
row.
They do a show in La Jolla?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Christmas night.
A Christmas night.
Yeah, we don't do Christmas Eve, but Christmas night, yeah.
Who comes out to that show?
Oh, it's pathetic.
Are there people there?
People that you should imagine who would go to a show on Christmas.
It's not
They're
the
there.
Family.
They're there.
They all went and saw the newest the good people went and saw the newest Pixar movie that day.
But you know what? I feel so bad for them that I always try my best. And actually, I have to say, it's always been fun.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge.
I've never done a show on Christmas Day.
Well, I hope you don't have to. But you will.
I don't like New Year shows. This show is usually...
You don't like New Year shows?
I don't like New Year shows.
I love New Year shows.
Right. That, again, married, don't like people. So again, that doesn't... Yeah.
You know what, though?
There's an energy to a New Year show that I don't like. Which is, like, it's not about the comedy show. That's the arrogance in me, because I'm like, oh, this comedy show's the only thing that matters. I don't care about your New Year's party. It's just a stupid artistic integrity. The show matters more.
Shut up.
I don't care about a countdown. I don't care about a champagne toast.
I like disasters, so that's why I like New Year's Eve shows. I like it all. And I also like when I get to help the staff pour the cheap champagne.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing, going in the back and pouring those little plastic glasses and knocking the waitress over who has 15 of them. I love that every year.
Good for you. Well, I hope tonight goes well.
Oh, yeah. I think it's
thank you for
terrible.
Doing this, Vicky.
Thank you, Dustin. And congratulations on your career and taking it all the way.
Thank you so much.
Because we all love you.
Oh, we love you as well. Thank you so much, Vicky.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you have not done so already, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all the social medias and share with all of your friends. Also, if you want to shoot us a note, you can email us at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and you have not done so already, please go back and listen to all the episodes we've done before. Thanks so much, everybody.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.